You're listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. But mommy, I want there to be a Santa Claus. Motivated reasoning and the martial arts. Motivated reasoning is a cognitive bias in which the biased individual tries to find and present evidence for what he or she wants to be true, as opposed to rationally seeking the truth, no matter where that may lead. To me, a classic example of this is represented by people on both sides of what I consider one of the silliest arguments in a martial arts world full of silly arguments. It pertains to grappling. The argument is, which is better, gi or no gi? First, I'll present my take on this debate and then get back to motivated reasoning. For those of you unfamiliar with this earth-shaking controversy, some practitioners of submission grappling train and compete while wearing the heavy jacket and long pants used in judo, jiu-jitsu, and sambo, although sambo tends to only use the jacket. This uniform is called different things by different people, but the Japanese word gi has become the universal term. Other submission grappling practitioners train in a stretch fabric wrestling singlet, or stretch fabric shorts and shirt. Or stretch fabric shorts, if you're going to compete in MMA. The gi style of clothing is designed and constructed to be gripped and pulled, and to hold up to such use for months or years of training. The no-gi style of clothing is worn with the tacit understanding that it will not be gripped or pulled. There are a number of individual arguments and claims from both sides of this debate. Among the claims from the pro-gi side are that the game is more technical when wearing the gi, and thus offers more knowledge. Another claim is that because people are usually wearing clothes, training while wearing the gi is more realistic than no-gi training, so far as self-defense is concerned. Among the claims from the no-gi side are, training while wearing the gi is not realistic. I'm not going to get into a fight with someone who's wearing pajamas, or while wearing my own pajamas. Another one goes something like, I'm preparing to fight in the cage, and I don't want to grow dependent on grabbing the gi. Or, the gi creates unnatural friction, and that slows me down. Let's address these arguments one at a time. The first argument in favor of training while wearing the gi was that the game is more technical, offering more knowledge. In my humble but educated opinion, this argument is unmitigated bullshit. It betrays a lack of any deep knowledge of the no-gi game. It's insulting to no-gi practitioners as well. Grappling without the gi is every bit as technical as grappling with it. It's simply that it is differently technical. If you hold this belief yourself, perhaps you've never been instructed by a competent wrestling or no-gi grappling coach. The process of learning the natural handles and friction points of the human body is absolutely as detailed and technical as the gripping phase of the gi game. This type of thinking touches on a pet peeve of mine. The condescending attitude shown by some gi-clad grapplers towards no-gi grapplers, especially wrestlers, is offensive. The tendency of this arrogant subset is to think of wrestlers as intellectually deficient muscleheads with little technical knowledge or skill. Before I go on, however, it's important to point out that there's plenty of insult and condescension coming from the part of the no-gi side as well, and it's equally offensive. The tendency of this arrogant subset is to think of gi-clad grapplers as effeminate and nerdy, relying on the gi to cover up their weakness. It has always irritated me how the inherent tribalism of humans leads some of us to make fun of what we perceive as lesser sports. In my opinion, people of every culture and every sport are equally intelligent and talented. In any athletic endeavor to which a sufficient population of humans choose to turn their attention over a sufficient period of time, the technical skill and knowledge will always reach a very high level. Period. I see and hear this type of behavior from people all the time. Sometimes it's rugby and Australian rules football players and fans making fun of American football players for wearing pads. They should try standing up to NFL All-Pro defensive lineman J.J. Watt's pass rush without wearing pads themselves. Sometimes it's NASCAR fans belittling Formula One racing. Other times it's Americans in general making fun of soccer. In every case, each sport is, especially at the elite level, equally difficult to play in its own way. Try returning the 200-mile-per-hour plus serve of an Olympic badminton player. Or treading water without your hands for hours at a time, as silly-looking synchronized swimmers do when practicing. Or accurately throwing a disc golf driver disc more than 600 feet. I agree that for each of us, some sports are boring to watch. That's fine. It's true for me as well. It's just that you shouldn't justify your taste by belittling the athletes who compete at a high level in those sports. Every one of them could effortlessly humiliate pretty much any of us if we were to try their sport ourselves. Okay, end of rant. Let's tackle the second pro-gi argument. It went, because people are usually wearing clothes, training while wearing the gi is more realistic than no gi, at least so far as self-defense is concerned. Unlike the first argument, I have less of a problem with this one. Not enough, however, to convince me to train only in the gi. I'll delve more into the realism question later. Okay, let's move on to the anti-gi arguments. The first one goes, training with the gi is not realistic. I'm not going to get into a fight with someone who is wearing pajamas or while wearing my own pajamas. I think this is an example of the logical fallacy called the false dichotomy, or false choice. In this case, implying that training with the gi is either totally realistic or totally unrealistic, with no shades of gray in between. As is usually the case, I prefer to take a more nuanced approach. The type and amount of clothing worn by either person in a fight can vary widely. It can range from nearly nude to bundled up for Minnesota winters. Judo and jiu-jitsu athletes develop skills at gripping virtually all parts of the uniform. Perhaps the most important attachment points are the sleeve, the pants leg, and probably the one that most no-gi practitioners despise the most, the lapel and or collar grip. Let's look at each of these grips and at the viability of a no-gi substitute for each one as well. The sleeve grip is a very effective way to control one of your opponent's arms with one of your hands. When properly done, it takes very little strength. This is the grip, in my opinion, that has the poorest analog or substitute grip in the no-gi game. While you can grip the opponent's wrist with one hand, it's a far less secure grip and far easier to break. The sleeve grip takes advantage of the opponent wearing a garment with long sleeves. To me, you will encounter self-defense opponents wearing short sleeves sufficiently often that I consider the sleeve grip the least commonly available grip for self-defense of the three major grips that I mentioned earlier. This combination of lowest availability with the lack of decent no-gi substitute, to me, makes the sleeve grip the strongest argument of the three for doing some of your self-defense training without the gi. It's still valuable, in my opinion, however, to learn the details and uses of the sleeve grip through at least some training in the gi. Similar arguments can be made for the pants leg grip. It too has a less effective substitute in the no-gi game. The difference is, however, in my opinion, smaller. A properly executed foot grip, not ankle grip, is considerably more secure than a wrist grip, but still inferior to a pants leg grip at the ankle or knee. In addition, I would guess that the percentage of self-defense adversaries wearing long pants is considerably higher than that of those with long sleeves. Perhaps the single most important consideration of using the pants leg grip is for passing the guard. While guard passing skills are among the most important and difficult skill sets to develop in sport jiu-jitsu, the challenge of passing the guard should come up far less often in self-defense. For both of these reasons, the pants leg grip gives less support to the argument that training in the gi alone is unrealistic for self-defense than does the sleeve grip. Now we come to the collar and lapel grip. This grip gives you a great deal of ability to influence and even control the opponent's posture. It also allows for one of the most powerful and low-risk attacks in jiu-jitsu, the cross-collar choke. Notice that I did not limit my comment to sport jiu-jitsu, because as long as the opponent is wearing any kind of shirt or jacket, no matter how lightweight the fabric, you can still secure the equivalent of the lapel grip and pull off the collar choke, provided that you are familiar with what I call the collar trick. This trick turns even the flimsiest of wife beaters, t-shirts, or rash guards into thick, sturdy ropes around the opponent's neck. The drawback to the collar trick is that it usually leaves the shirt torn or badly stretched after a single application of the choke, even though it will have served just fine for the choke itself. This makes the gi an advantage for training, not a disadvantage, unless you are independently wealthy or own an unlimited supply of training shirts. The gi serves as a durable analog for any shirt your self-defense opponent may be wearing, including but not limited to his pajamas. Unfortunately, the collar trick is too difficult to describe in an audio setting. Many good instructors can show it to you. I learned it from BJJ legend Jean-Jacques Machado. As a result of the existence of this trick, the collar or lapel grip provides the weakest argument against gi training for self-defense. As for referring to the gi as pajamas, which I hear quite a lot, sometimes it's used in a good-natured way, but in this context I find it dismissive and insulting. Working from the other direction, it is true that just about any skill you learn while no gi training can be applied against an opponent who is wearing a gi. But that should not be used as an excuse to deny yourself knowledge, the kind of knowledge that comes from training both with and without the gi. In my opinion, no particular garment or lack of garment perfectly represents all the possibilities of self-defense. Let's look at the second anti-gi argument. It goes, I'm preparing to fight in the cage, and I don't want to grow dependent on gripping the gi. I have little or no argument with this. Assuming that your only goal in martial arts training is to compete in MMA, you want to do most of your training without the gi. I will quibble a bit, however, with the word dependent. I think if gi training makes up only a lesser fraction of your grappling training, there will be no contamination or confusion in your game. Why do I even bring this up? Imagine a scenario in which a budding young MMA fighter is only able to find a partner for no gi grappling training 2 or 3 times a week. He could easily, if he wish, supplement by adding an extra 1 or 2 days a week training with a local jiu-jitsu club, and in my opinion only gain from the process. The third anti-gi argument went like this. The gi slows me down. It is absolutely the case that the gi creates a higher level of friction between you and your opponent, and slows things down. My answer to this is, so what? It slows your opponent down too. This slower pace can take some getting used to, but in the final analysis goes right back to the dividing line between self-defense and sport. If you are training for self-defense, you want to be able to adapt to the slower game played when fully clothed, and adapt as well to the faster game when less fully clothed. As you can probably surmise, to me, the gi versus no gi debate is far less cut and dried than those on either side might claim, not to mention a bit silly. I would be happy to have a reasoned discussion with anyone on any of the points I've covered. But it's my opinion that many, if not most, of those participating on both sides of this argument have no wish to logically discuss the subject. Instead, they engage in motivated reasoning. We humans have a tendency to make many decisions in a process that is essentially backwards. We first decide, usually on an emotional basis, what we want to be true, and then go out in search of evidence to support this position. That is motivated reasoning. In the case of this discussion, it's often the fact that the grappling garments you are least used to take you out of your comfort zone. Many on the no-gi side simply have an emotional reaction to the very appearance of the gi. It doesn't look to them like what a real grappler should be wearing, or even what a real man should be wearing. It looks funny, or silly, or effeminate. That's sissified for those of you with a limited vocabulary. Perhaps they had a bad experience when first training while wearing a gi, and blame their failure not on their own shortcomings, but on the garment. Many on the pro-gi side may have an equally emotional reaction to the appearance of no-gi training apparel, or, equally likely, don't like how they look wearing it. Perhaps they had a bad experience training without the gi. Without being properly trained, losing the ability to grab the collar or lapel can be especially disconcerting. Such emotional reactions are precisely what leads to the cognitive bias of motivated reasoning. Once a human stakes out an emotional position and engages in motivated reasoning to try to support it, you can forget trying to engage in a reasoned discussion with them. Watch for it among those with whom you interact. More importantly, be extra careful not to engage in it yourself. Don't be that guy. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.